Hello, Lifebook members, and thank you for tuning in to the Lifebook Member Podcast today. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I have a very special guest for Intellectual Month. Oh, a pair of guests, actually. From the Flow Consciousness Institute today to talk about the power of flow and intuition, we have Justin and Jackie. How are you two doing today?
Great. Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, we're doing wonderful. Thank you.
Oh, I'm so excited to speak with you about Flow Consciousness Institute and, you know, this whole idea of tapping into this intellectual power, I would consider it. It's perfect for Intellectual Month. Before we start talking about everything, though, can you give a little background on yourselves and then how you got together and started Flow Consciousness Institute?
Yeah. So both Jackie and I started on the flow path independently quite a while before we knew each other, actually. And we had both been having experiences and doing research that were taking us further and further in the direction of really understanding the mechanics of what we call flow consciousness, which is similar but also different to flow states. And we were both on our own path. I was more in the entrepreneurial space, working at building out a division of the company and launching some of my own projects. And Jackie, you can chime in on yourself here, but Jackie was off traveling the world in high adventure, meeting with influential people and doing her own research. And we had a really synchronistic moment when a client of mine who was living in New York at the time met with Jackie somewhat unexpectedly. And they started talking and she's like, "You need to speak to Justin because you guys are saying almost the exact same thing, but we didn't know each other." And so we got on a call and we started comparing notes, and turns out we had both discovered a lot of the same things independently, which is usually a really good sign that you're hot on the trail of something that's true and that can be objectively proven. And so we got together and we formed the Flow Consciousness Institute.
Well, there's an important piece of the puzzle that really kind of accurately demonstrates and illustrates some of the flow consciousness principles. So, you know, we had met once in person, but didn't really have a lot of quality time to drop in with each other. And so I, being nomadic at the time, was going to be doing a road trip up the coast of California. And so I reached out to Justin and said, "Hey, I'm going to be passing through Santa Barbara. We should link up and kind of see where the synergy is." And when I got to Santa Barbara, I was in so much pain that I ended up in the emergency room and then hospitalized for 5 days. And as a result of that, we ended up spending a lot of time together. Justin and his girlfriend came to visit me every day, and we felt so much resonance that we knew we needed to work together. So kind of all of this was birthed in the hospital when I was strapped to a hospital. So, you know, one of the principles that we teach in flow consciousness is practicing radical acceptance and trusting the wisdom of life. So oftentimes we think when we're facing challenging or difficult circumstances, we think it shouldn't be happening. But so often there's a greater wisdom at play. And so it's one of those sliding doors moments that, had that not happened, who knows what our lives would be like now. So, you know, I really think there was some sort of divine orchestration that allowed for us to really have that time together to feel that resonance so that we could then come together and create everything that we've created.
Wow, that is a powerful, powerful story. FlowConsciousnessInstitute.com is their website. Everyone needs to check this out. Very, very cool stuff. Let me start here, guys. What are flow states? How would you define them? And then what is flow consciousness?
Yeah, that's a great question. Flow states are commonly talked about now, kind of in the collective. Everyone's talking about flow states. And flow states are those experiences where time seems to disappear. You get into this expanded creative state. And, you know, it's the experience that people have when they're doing something that they're deeply immersed in and they really love. So, you know, oftentimes it's surfing, playing music, something like that. But flow states, by their very nature, are inherently temporary, right? So you have this peak experience, but then you come back down to your regular default way of being. Whereas flow consciousness is, it's more of a way of being that you can live in at all times.
Mm. Yeah, flow consciousness is basically like an accelerated path to living your full potential. And another way we describe it is when everything that you want and need to be wildly successful and thrive, giving your gift to the world, living your purpose, comes to you effortlessly in perfect synchronicity. So, you know, flow states are really in the realm of peak performance, expanded states of awareness, which are awesome. They're great. But flow consciousness is about taking that kind of peak experience and stretching it out. So that's your entire life. That's all of the time. So it's like more of a stage of development versus a peak state of being. So our goal is to help people experience flow 24/7, no matter what they're doing, no matter how good or challenging something is, and whether or not they're engaged in, you know, some kind of activity that would normally engender a flow state.
Yeah, and there's some continuity. You know, it's a spectrum. So flow states are definitely a part of the flow consciousness experience. And it's where people get really a taste of what it's like to live into that flow consciousness. So flow consciousness is really tapping into the essence, the true nature of who we are, and living from that place rather than from this conditioned program self.
That's really fascinating. You know, I know a little bit about flow states, and I've done a little bit of, you know, exploration of that. But this idea that those states are just kind of a microcosm, and that you could expand them into more of a way of life to where everything you're doing is part of a larger state, that's really fascinating. And I can imagine that that would contribute to your quality of life quite a bit if you really focused on that and tried to cultivate that in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's seven or six hallmarks of flow. So there's a seventh emerging, because I keep saying seven. So that usually means that there's one that's coming that we're still identifying. But there's six core hallmarks of flow. And the first one is heightened synchronicity. People tend to experience a massive increase in synchronicity, which is, you know, among many things, a reflection that one is calibrated to the Tao, you know, or to the effortless path, which is also the second hallmark of flow, which is effortlessness. So people tend to experience a huge increase in the amount of effortlessness that they experience. So literally being in the right place at the right time for the exact resource that you need to support you in the next step of your process or path coming to you effortlessly, in perfect synchronicity. People also tend to experience exponential growth and success. So really rapidly accelerated growth and success path. Flow consciousness is super nonlinear, and so nonlinear growth by its very nature is exponential. So people are on the path of least resistance, and therefore they end up achieving goals and major milestones much quicker.
Yeah, it takes on this quality that life is conspiring in your favor, right? So you're so aligned with what you're here to do, aligned with your gifts, with your passion, with your purpose, that all of the resources that you need and everything just starts to kind of unfold in this really effortless way. And there's a distinction that we like to make around effortlessness, because people get tripped up on that, you know, that everything takes effort. And really being in this place of alignment, things just, they start to happen organically and naturally in a really beautiful, effortless way. It's not that you're not going to be taking action. You're going to be taking inspired action, not doing the things that you feel like you have to do or things that you should do or just following some other person's path. So it's not that you're not taking action. You're taking inspired action is the distinction around that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Deep emotional freedom. People tend to experience a lot of deep healing and release of old fears, limiting beliefs and so on, things that keep us stuck. People develop a deep sense of trust in life. So they trust themselves and they trust life that they're supported, which is really, really powerful.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I was describing before, that it's not that you're never going to face obstacles and challenges in life. It's how you perceive them and meet them that creates either the path of struggle and suffering or the path of ease and flow. So challenges are always going to be there, but struggle and suffering are optional. So it's really learning to trust life and get curious when something is happening that's a challenging situation or you're being emotionally triggered by something, really look at it and see like what's there for you to see in the mirror, like what are you being shown or redirected to, and being curious about it, which then you get to meet it with much less resistance.
I love that. I want to talk about cultivating this in our life and trying to, you know, have a healthier relationships, spend more time in these states. But before we move on to that, I want to talk about some of the things that get in our way. You already mentioned limiting beliefs. I can only imagine that before you start trying to incorporate into this into your life, you probably have to remove some roadblocks, or, you know, not you specifically, but one probably often has to remove these limiting beliefs or intellectual constructs that might get in the way of our happiness, of our flow, of our destiny. Is that making sense? What do you think about that?
Absolutely. And we say that there's an inner flow and an outer flow. And inner flow is about 60% of this process that we do. And it is deep reprogramming at the mental, emotional, energetic, and physical level of all of these limiting beliefs, these different programs that we've taken on, emotional patterns, traumas, things like that. Because if we're not examining them and they're just kind of lurking in our subconscious, they're driving the ship and we're not even aware of it. So we work with a framework called BETDAR that really describes how this all impacts your reality. And so that stands for beliefs, emotions, thoughts, decisions, actions, and results or reality. So at the deepest level, we say that your beliefs are responsible for shaping your perception. And we take on these beliefs from, you know, epigenetically from our ancestors. They're imprinted, you know, in the birth to seven age range. We take them on from the media, culture, religion, our parents, schooling, all of these different places. We have these belief structures that we've taken on that shape our view of ourselves, of others, of the world, that are, you know, the lens that we're viewing life through. Mm-hmm. And so if we're holding all of these limiting beliefs in our subconscious, that impacts our emotional state. It influences the thoughts that we think, the decisions we're making, and ultimately the results that we're getting. So you get to start to reverse engineer life using life as a mirror to show you when you're not in that alignment, what are these beliefs that can be creating this unnecessary struggle.
Can you elaborate on the rest of that acronym?
Yeah, so BETDAR stands for beliefs, emotions, thoughts, decisions, actions, and results or reality. And it's basically a map of the equation that spits out your reality, starting with your beliefs and your emotions, and then moving through the rest of that sequence to the final experience of results or reality. So
that's
beliefs,
really fascinating.
Yeah, so beliefs influence our emotions and our beliefs together produce our thoughts. Our thoughts are what are the precursor to our decisions to some degree. Mm-hmm. And then our decisions determine what we actually do, what actions we take, and where we, and our actions influence where we are in space and time. So every time we make a decision, every time we take an action on it, we actually like move our bodies in space and time. And your reality is whatever you're currently experiencing right now based on where you are and all the past places you've been. So when we start to change our belief structures and our emotional state, that starts to shoot us down different trajectories and therefore produces different realities. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a famous saying in the personal development space that, you know, we're all given 24 hours and we all use it very, very differently. And it's true that we all have different starting points, but for every person who would say, well, you know, I was born in a poor family and I had no education, there's somebody that started in a worse background and has become a billionaire, you know? And so no matter where you start, no matter what situation, what hand you were dealt, we all have 24 hours in a day. And the experience, the reality that we create out of that is based on our decisions and our actions, which at the base level are influenced by our beliefs and our emotional state. So that's why it's so important to work there and why it's such a key access point to flow, is because when you rewire everything at the belief and the emotional level, then it naturally affects all the other steps in that sequence, the thoughts, the decisions, the actions. So it's a really leveraged place to work. And that's how you can start to enter into an effortless flow, is that what we've done is identified a lot of the belief structures that somebody needs to take on and a lot of what they need to let go of to lock them into that reality. So we're actually mapping the unconscious and really architecting it in such a way that people can engineer the end reality that they want.
Love that. That really resonates with me. And I understand how that can be a key component or even a prerequisite to this whole idea of flow consciousness. if we are lucky enough to have a grip on our beliefs and we've worked through this stuff already, what can we do? What are some practices we can engage in? What are some exercises we can do? What are some actions that we can take to try to cultivate more flow states, to try to cultivate more flow consciousness into our lives?
Well, I think one thing is just having the awareness around how the mechanics of how all of this works. So when you're taking on this perspective that you're 100% responsible for everything in your reality, and you start to look at where you're creating meaning, because right, everything is inherently neutral. Every experience is inherently neutral until we assign it a value or a meaning. And we tend to lump things into categories of good and bad, right and wrong. And whatever meaning we're placing on something is going to have an impact on how we're showing up. So, you know, using this framework that we just mentioned, taking a belief like the world is a dangerous place, right? So a lot of people are operating with that core belief. And if you're watching the news, if you're reading the newspaper, or, you know, the media is constantly bombarding us with all of this evidence that backs up this worldview that the world is a dangerous place, right? And so what that does is that evokes states of fear, and, you know, people are limiting their taking risks in the world, or going and interacting with people that are different from them, or traveling and having new experiences. And, you know, so that's dramatically restricting their experience of life. Whereas someone who has the opposite belief that the world is inherently a safe place will have a very different experience of reality. They're going to feel a lot more freedom and peace, and try new experiences and engage with other people, and just have a richer, more full experience of life. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, both realities exist, right? There's enough evidence on either end to back up either perspective that the world is a dangerous place or the world is a safe place. It's just, which one are you choosing? So starting to see and have this awareness around our beliefs and how it's a lens that we're choosing to view life. And in each moment, it's a choice. We're really taking our power back.
Yeah, absolutely. So understanding, would you say in that same category, continually learning and exploring and making this pursuit an active part of your life? You know what I mean? Like there really is no end to this journey, I feel. And if you want to make this part of your life and live an extraordinary life, let's be honest, you should probably accept that and get to work and start studying and reading books and listening to podcasts and talking to other intellectually minded people who are on the same path and talking to therapists and professionals and all these people, right?
Absolutely. You know, there's so much value in doing the work and going into that inner introspection and really choosing to examine all of these scenarios where you're being emotionally triggered, or situations are coming up for you, you're facing difficult challenges, and really examining them and asking yourself, what must I believe in order to be having this experience, or to be having this emotional reaction, or to be having these looping thoughts? And really start to do the work to identify what those beliefs are, and then start to shift them.
Remain inquisitive and curious.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good first step.
I really like that a lot. Kind of interjection, side thought here. How does meditation play a role at all in your work? And where does meditation lie in relation to things like flow?
Yeah, so meditation is what I would say is it's essentially non-essential in the sense that you'll move faster, farther. You'll go farther and you'll move faster if you meditate. Absolutely.
I like that.
But it's not required per se to live in flow. And I think that at the end of the day, like the goal is for your life to be the meditation, for everything you do to be done in a more meditative kind of way, not necessarily mindful per se, because that's valuable in its own right, but to really like live the meditation.
I like that.
Yeah. And in terms of like brainwave states, for sure, meditation can help prime you into different brainwave states that will give you easier access to flow states and easier access to flow consciousness. I mean, I've been meditating every day for 15 years. And so, you know, I think I took for granted at first how essential that was for me to ultimately end up on this path, but it was hugely important. And I still think that it's a key part of my practice and it's a key part of me accessing flow. But we don't, it's not required to have the experience of living in flow in general.
That definitely makes perfect sense. It will help. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. I like that a lot. I wanted to ask you guys about your work in intuition. And you know, this incredible intellectual power of intuition. I'm especially fascinated by it myself. I'm a semi-professional poker player. So intuition is an incredible part of my life and the heroes that I grew up watching on TV. I truly believe that intuition is a kind of superpower that some people are gifted with and that some people can work, everyone can work at, I feel. I've always just been so fascinated by it. But to be honest, there's not a whole ton of, you know, work that I see, at least in the personal development world, around intuition. Why is it fascinating to you guys? What have you discovered about it? And how can we harness it in this arena of flow states and achieving our life vision?
Well, you know, a lot of the great sages have said that intuition is the highest form of intellect. And our experience is definitely true with that. And it's, you know, this is a core area of the research that we're doing now at the Institute, because one, there's a ton that has not been mapped and discovered yet about it that we're discovering. And two, like you're saying, it really is a superhuman capacity that we all have. And I think the best way to understand intuition is through an analogy that I like to use called the chessboard analogy, that really kind of paints a beautiful picture of why somebody would want to use intuition and what's so much better about it than how we normally operate.
Ooh, please.
And yeah, the chessboard analogy is basically like, imagine a human player is playing a game of chess against a supercomputer. Now, if you think about the human player for a second, you know, how many moves in advance can a human player see before there's so many possible combinations of moves that it becomes too complicated to know what the next best move is?
Right. Very few compared to the computer.
Yeah. You know, it maybe the human on average, most people can see 2 to 3 moves in advance, and I know because I've been playing a lot of chess lately. Chess grandmasters have been said to be able to see sometimes 6, maybe 10 moves in advance, depending on how early in the game it is.
Oh wow.
So not that far. Now, on the other hand, a chess supercomputer, okay, in literally a quarter of a second, a half a second, it can calculate every possible combination of moves that could possibly happen based on every single move that somebody could make for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
And it knows exactly what the next best move is to make to win the game. And so the human player is a metaphor for our rational, logical mind. And the chess supercomputer is a metaphor for our intuition. Our intuition is, when we're actually using the highest form of intuition, it's a quantum supercomputer. Literally, it's processing a huge amount of data that we're not even aware of with our conscious, rational, logical minds, and synthesize it into a very actionable, you know, piece of data that is fed to you about what to do. And so people don't realize that. And so a lot of times they think that intuition is overly simplistic, but it's actually the opposite. It's extremely, extremely powerful. It can actually read. There's been studies that have shown that it could read into past, present, and future. It can pull data from anywhere in space and time. I mean, anything that you can experience with quantum entanglement, your intuition can do. So pretty much anything. Yeah. And so when you operate from that place, every decision that you make is optimized for the highest possible outcome for you and everybody else and all of their life on the planet. And so it's a really, this is the Tao, you know, this is what all these ancient sages and great mystery traditions and mystery schools were pointing to, is that this is the key to unlocking our full potential and requires us to surrender to it as much as possible. But the results are exponentially better when we use intuition.
That is super fascinating.
I just want to add
a
distinction. You know, I noticed you said that intuition is a superhuman capacity. And while it is, you also mentioned that some people have it. And in reality, we all have access to this gift. You know, this is something that's part of our fundamental biological wiring. And it's how, you know, we come into the world navigating and making sense of the world, but then it's kind of conditioned out of us and we're taught to think rationally and use more of our logical mind. And so we at some point when we were younger kind of disconnect from using our intuition and shift more into the rational, logical mind, because that's kind of what our society values more, because people aren't, you know, aware of the gift of operating from intuition. So it's absolutely something that everyone has this innate inborn capacity to operate from. So it's more about a relearning how to tap into that state to really experience the benefits.
That is really fascinating. Yeah, absolutely. And I do feel that some people are especially gifted in this area. Like I've met you, everyone knows someone who they consider an intuitive. So clearly it's, like you said, it's some sort of function that we're just not expressing. It's as if everybody stopped exercising. Some people would still be strong because of their genetics. You know what I mean? Right. But we need to relearn, like you said.
Well, you know, so there's some interesting things coming out. Yeah, totally. Some people are naturally more gifted at it, just like some people are better artists and stuff like that. So, but it's like going to the gym, you know, you can go to the intuition gym and build that capacity and skill. And there's a lot of fascinating research that is not being well publicized, but that we have our finger on the pulse around, that they're actually showing different brain regions now are associated with psychic capacity. And so we're developing meditations and stuff at the Institute to strengthen those different areas of the brain and to cause new neuronal growth. And, you know, you can use different supplementation protocols and stuff to do it. So that's basically what, you know, besides really mapping the unconscious, mapping how reality works, we're also highly engaged in developing protocols to like help people develop all these things that make their lives exponentially better and more successful.
That is really fascinating. How can we incorporate flow and intuition, these very intangible things, into our goal setting? I mean, Lifebook is all about defining and achieving your life vision. How can we kind of let intuition play into that?
Well, this is a great question, because this is something that we talk about in the program a lot, because when most people make goals, what they do is they drop straight into their logical or rational mind, and they're unconsciously assessing their goals by what they think is possible through the lens of all their limiting beliefs, through all their fears. You know, sometimes they may get into a situation where they're really taught to dream big, but then oftentimes what'll happen is they'll dream bigger, but it's not necessarily, you know, what's in their soul, you know, their soul vision, to make a distinction
in their heart.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
Yeah. Or they're looking to fulfill a dream so they feel worthy or validated, or, you know, are making their parents happy.
Someone
or whatever
else's expectations, right?
Exactly. Fulfilling. Yes.
Yeah. I wrote a post the other day, and I was kind of in the Zen mode, and I wrote, you know, the foolish man sets a goal that he thinks will bring him fulfillment. You know, the wise man doesn't set a goal until he's found fulfillment. It's a paradox, but the point is that, you know, you want to sit in that place of like really intuition. Inspiration is a form of intuition. So you want to set your goals with your inspiration, with your excitement, with your joy, with your bliss out beyond the boundaries of what you think is possible, or trying to fulfill some unmet childhood needs. You really want to get into a meditative space and dream with your heart, dream into that space of like, what am I actually here to do? Beyond just trying to get my needs met by having, you know, tens of millions of dollars and a house on the beach. Like, what is my Nelson Mandela? What is my Martin Luther King? What is my, you know, purpose on that level? Not to say that everybody has to be world-changing revolutionary. Not everyone's purpose is to be at that level. But whatever that is for you, that's where we encourage people to set goals from, because that's the goal that's in alignment with your intuition. And that's the goal that's going to bring you into flow.
And that's the thing, like intuition is so easy to read once you, you know, remember or learn how to do it. It's just reading this subtle energy. But that's the easy part. The tricky part for people is often following it, because your intuition, as we said before, is nonlinear. It often doesn't make sense. It's telling you to do the thing that your rational mind is like, you're crazy. This, you know, it's so illogical sometimes that people don't trust it, or, you know, they have fear and doubt and all of these other things getting in the way, or, you know, they're creating these goals and they get stuck in the how it's going to happen and trying to figure it out. Whereas, you know, often it happens in ways that your rational mind could never even conceive of. So there's the art of letting go of an attachment to even achieving the goal, Because sometimes it's the journey and the path that's really, you know, more important than the actual achievement of the goal, and letting go of the how and surrendering to, you know, having to know how it's all going to unfold, because that often limits all of the possible outcomes and ways that it could happen and restricts it. So it's holding this grand vision that's coming from the heart and your inspiration, and letting go of an attachment and letting go of knowing how it's going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't always have to work out right. You know what I mean? I think trust is a hard part, because sometimes your intuition is, quote, wrong. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes you get it wrong, but that in itself is an intellectual construct. As you said before, well, it's all part of the journey.
That's a judgment just based on your perception.
Yeah, it's like intuition, that, and this is a challenge with a lot of the research out there on it, is that it's only wrong when you're measuring it on too short of a time scale.
That because, is fascinating.
Yeah, because what seems like, you know, like, let's say that your goal is to, you know, to have a house on the beach in Hawaii. That's been your goal, right? And you're doing everything you can to build that goal out. And you identify the property, and you found the perfect house, and you found all these things, and you're working really hard to earn the money, and you finally get it together, and your intuition's like, yes, go for this one. And you go to buy the property, and then the deal falls through, it doesn't work. And you're like, oh, I guess my intuition was wrong. But 2 days later, you meet someone hanging out on the beach, and all of a sudden they're like, hey, I've got an even better property for half the price in a nicer location. And that turns out to be the ideal one for you.
Right.
And, you know, and so your intuition is basically like, it doesn't care what you think the right outcome is. It only cares for what's the highest and best outcome for you ultimately. So our conscious rational minds will latch onto things. And then when it doesn't happen as expected, we go, well, our intuition failed. But the truth is that intuition's positioning you for the long game.
That's fascinating.
So when you set a goal, when your intuition says, okay, you know, this is the house, you know, or, you know, yeah, I mean, exactly that, literally, like if your intuition says, this is the house, it's because the experience of like going through everything that you need to go to attain that house is going to set you up for what's ever in your best long-term interest, regardless of whether you actually get that house or not. But you'll get something as good or better than the house, guaranteed.
Well, and here's a real life example. Several years ago, I had this big vision and I was offered funding for it after many years of holding this vision. And intuitionally, it just felt like a no. And I knew I couldn't follow through with it, even though on paper, everything looked like it had been everything that I'd been waiting for. And everyone thought I was insane. And so I walked away from this funding in order to go be a part of coaching on this tech incubator in Chile for 3 months where I wasn't going to get paid, you know, so it didn't make any sense. But yet being a part of that experience introduced me to, you know, a whole new world of people, which ultimately became part of my research, how I came to this idea of flow by studying engineers and programmers who had this unbelievable ability to have this hyper focus. So it's like this experience that seemed inconsequential at the time, and, you know, frankly, just people didn't understand why I made that decision, was an important piece of the puzzle years later, but I could only see in hindsight.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's the thing. I mean, there's the more stark contrasts, but then there's really long-term intangible ones, in the sense that every one of these things that happen, successes, failures, and washes, all add up to who you are.
Right.
So how could you ever discount anything, really? That's where it gets really kind of meta, you know?
Yeah. And this is where we talk about the non-linearity of flow, and especially intuition, is that flow and intuition are going to take you down the path of least resistance. And it may not be a path that makes a ton of sense to your rational, logical mind. But we know from taking, you know, from working with thousands of people and spending, you know, over a decade at this point, living this way of life and watching it apply in so many different life situations, from people that are students to people that are running huge companies, I mean, and everyone in between, it's like it works every time. But you have to let go of all of these concepts that make your ego feel really safe. you know, it requires you to really enter your hero's journey. Like Joseph Campbell has said, you know, you really have to go on that path wherever it leads you. But what we know for sure is that if you stick with it over time, it will lead you to something far better than you could have ever dreamed in your wildest dreams. And it will be the most amazing, adventure-filled, fulfilling journey you've ever been on. And so you basically, when you shift into that, and then eventually your mind, your rational mind, actually gets stretched to the point where you can start to think non-linearly. And that's a whole brilliant skill on its own. So there's layers and layers and layers to the journey, but that's a big piece of it. And that can be challenging for people. And that's one of the things that we spend a lot of time helping people through, is like learning to let go of the expectation and live in the journey.
And trust. And it's a muscle that you develop over time, you know? So each time you're making a decision from inspiration and intuition, you're flexing that muscle and learning lessons from it. And over time you develop this trust, so you can really start to let go of control and surrender. Because the only reason people are trying to control things is for this illusion of safety and security, which we never actually have anyway.
Right.
So it's learning to really just surrender and trust life and trust the path. And like you said, that all of these experiences that we're having, whether we label them as good or bad, positive or negative, they're all happening for us and shaping us and leading us on this path, you know, that we're meant to be on. So really just trusting in all of that.
It's really powerful stuff. I'm wondering if you guys have any final thoughts, any final parting words for the Lifebook members who are really crafting their life visions. Maybe they're at a bit of a roadblock. Maybe they're having a hard time listening to their intuition or entering flow. What advice do you have for the people out there who are designing their life vision and working hard every day to achieve it?
Yeah. a lot of talking points there. I would say that, you know, when you're designing your vision, it's super important to ask yourself super powerful questions like, if I could wave a magic wand and have anything that I wanted, but I had to be doing something that I loved, and I didn't have to worry about how or if it could happen, what would that thing be? And that gets you into a space of getting beyond like the limits of your conditioning and really dreaming from that heart space and really sitting in that space of inspiration, like what would bring me the greatest fulfillment with my time? And then as an extension of that too, because what will happen is a lot of times people will go into that expanded flow space, set the goal, and then they'll be like, okay, like you said, I'm going to work really hard to make it happen. And then they go back into linear mode, and then they start, you know, trying to figure everything out with their rational mind, and then they lose the flow. A powerful way to avoid that is to start prioritizing how you're feeling versus what you're thinking about constantly. So like if your mind says one thing, but your feeling, your heart, your intuition says, hey, actually, I know you think that you should be working on this project today, but I really want to go to the beach and just enjoy this beautiful day that's in the middle of winter right now. Go do that feeling thing, because that's the nonlinear path and you have no idea who's waiting for you at the beach or who's going to, what opportunity is going to be there outside of this normal flow of sitting in your office doing whatever you think you need to do. So it's really important to follow that, because a lot of the things that are waiting for you that are going to accelerate your path way faster than anything you could have worked hard towards are outside of the vision of your conscious mind. So you need to get outside of that linear path and start seeing what's in the periphery.
I would also add just, you know, becoming acutely aware of all of the resistance, the limiting beliefs, the fears and doubts and things that surround those goals. And in your dreaming process, asking, you know, what am I afraid of in relation to achieving this goal? And whether it's, I'm not worthy, I don't know enough, I'm a fraud, you know, on that end of the spectrum, or there's so many fears around, well, like if I get everything that I want, you know, maybe then I'll have to give up something else, or, you know, these upper limits that we have for ourselves. So really just examining and looking at what shows up when we are dreaming these dreams and leaning into that inspiration and intuition.
I love it. Absolutely love it. For all my listeners who are super interested in everything you're doing, where can they find you and where can they find more about Flow Consciousness Institute?
Yeah, on our website for sure. That's a great place to start. We have a growing library of content. We got some really great research papers that are not super dry and actually really fun to read and help paint a really amazing picture of this world they can enter into with Flow. We've got free trainings there. And then follow us on social media too. We're constantly posting our latest insights and stuff on our feeds there too. So
yeah, we're speaking and teaching all over the world. So we're always doing different events. So we'd love to see some of you and meet up around the world.
Oh, for sure. You'll definitely see life bookers out there now. Flowconsciousnessinstitute.com. And then why don't you give out your Instagram handles really quick?
Yeah, I'm Justin.Fairman, the only Justin Fairman in the world. So no trouble finding me. Yeah.
And mine is also my name, which is hard to say and spell, Jackie Knechtel. So JACKIEKNECHTEL.
Fantastic. Thank you guys so much for taking the time to do this. This was a wonderful Intellectual Month interview. I appreciate you guys sharing all of your wisdom.
Our pleasure. Thanks so much for having
us. So much fun.
Your great interview,
my friend.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. And I appreciate you Lifebook members for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this Intellectual Month interview. Stay tuned for more content coming. We've got Emotional Month coming up next month. This is Justin Fairman and Jackie Knechtel and Jordan River all signing off, wishing you an extraordinary day. We'll see you next time on the Lifebook Member Podcast.